You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Tuesday, David Shapiro is joined by my resident tame broker, and that is Nick Kunzer from Sunland Private Wealth. David Shapiro is deputy chairman of Sasfin Securities, based in Mirror's Arch in Johannesburg. Gentlemen, it's all about retail today, I think, because I'm just looking at the top two. David, start with you, because Nick and I have spoken about this morning. Massmart and Woolies, these are really, really big moves.
Sure. And, I mean, Woolies, we know the story. I'm surprised that the response has been as positive as it has. Or, well, let's put it this way. If you're Ian Moyer, you must feel the shares go up 8% after you're pushed out or resigned.
Yeah.
It sends a message. To be honest, I'm not quite sure what the message is, you know, other than perhaps disillusionment with Mr. Moyer. I know that a lot has to be done, and maybe after so many years, whoever's been in charge, like Moyer, you know, can't go back on certain decisions that he introduced, and therefore, you need to replace him to take some of the hard medicine, which we saw incidentally in Massmart. You know, once the previous leaders were out the way, Mr. Slade, comes in from America, and he does what he has to do. And I think perhaps that's why the market's reacting so positively, is that these are decisions that could have been taken or should have been taken some time ago.
So what do you think, Nick? I mean, do you think this is obviously not a macroeconomic story? It's not suddenly that we've got loads of money and we're going out and spending, and because of trading updates which are looming in the next week or so, these are going to reveal sparkling numbers. It's just a change of management and rationalization within the company. So it's a corporate action rather than a macroeconomic action, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, look, the retail environment hasn't changed as much in 24 hours to validate a bounce like this in the share price. But, you know, you also got to put in perspective, I think the number of, you know, as we have in a fairly sophisticated capital markets on the JSC, you know, there are obviously a number of shorts out there. People were playing it on the short side. They were worried about maybe some capital raise with David Jones, etc. Disillusionment from current management, which is now changing. So I think if you throw all those into the pot, and given where it has come from, you know, close to 100 shares back in the good old days to where it is now, that, you know, in the context is a, you know, 8% bounce justified, maybe a little bit overdone, but I think in the context of it, you can understand maybe also a couple of new shareholders coming on board today saying, okay, well, management's changing, strategy may be changing. It is a much-loved retail institution within South Africa. Maybe it's time to take a stab. So if you throw those all into the pot, I think you can justify a bit
of it. I think it wasn't that long ago that one of the major Cape Town-based fund managers took a big stake in Woolies down in the low 40s. So they're justified. Now they've made themselves 22%.
Easy
like
game,
that.
This.
Yeah.
Easy game.
Please, I mean, if only I didn't like talking so much, I'm sure I could be a really, really good fund manager. David, do you know anything about Roy Bagattini?
No, he sold blues and he sold jeans. That's all we know. So,
they go hand in hand.
with Levi Strauss, of course. I mean, that's a huge business today. That goes back. These were the original jean makers, and Levi's were synonymous with jeans. But listen, to hold a position to be in charge of commercial operations in the Americas, which is quite a wide region, surely underpins some competency. So I don't think he's a slouch. He's an ex-South African. I don't know how long he's been outside the country, but obviously they did the research, and they only made the appointment, or they only asked Ian Moyer to step down once they were sure that he was going to join. So we still have to meet him, we still have to know about him, and it'll take some time before he gets to know the company and can start to turn it around.
So what happens?
I was going to say we were just chatting on this morning meeting when the news broke, and in our usual morning meeting, and one or two comments this morning about, you know, was he South African, wasn't he not? But we generally got battered back by our research guys saying, look, this is not unsurprising. If they were looking for a successor, don't get carried away with yourselves. You know, this is not a big super surprise. So that also needs to be put into context too, that I think this has been a plan of the board. Where they step, you're stepping, I think, in the end of, beginning of next month, the 16th of February or somewhere.
That's right.
So, yes, it's in line with their plans. And, sorry to interrupt.
No problem at all. I just wonder how it goes. I mean, I don't know anything about South African boardrooms. But what happens is, do they say to Ian Moore, look, it's not going so well at the moment. The share price is below 50 Rand. Mm. It's halved. And therefore, we're going to start the succession process. Or does Mr. Moore go to them and say, I think it's time for me to go now. I did my bit, got us to over 100. How does it work?
He's staying on the board, isn't he, David? I think his wish was to return to Australia.
Yeah.
So he's going to be put in charge of David Jones and returning to Australia. So he's still going to be around, per se.
Yeah, exactly right. He was due to retire within a year.
Okay.
So that's what I say. It's not a big surprise. And probably having found a successor, the successor doesn't want to hang around for a year. And once it's going to happen, let it happen. So he'll continue with David Jones. I couldn't make up my mind while I was there, you know, looking at David Jones and still trying to work out, is there any compelling reason that I would visit the store, or does it make it any different from where it was? Back in the day, it used to be one of these iconic stores, which was really at the top end of the market. So I couldn't get a grip on the Australian market.
Oh, that's right. You were there. Did you go to their new flagship? Apparently it's a monstrous thing.
It is monstrous, but, you know, there again, I've visited New York stores and so on. Mm. Just looking at the crowds, and, I did shop in the Wakefield one, in the Bondi Junction, David Jones and that. And I walk around and I look at it and I'm saying, is there anything really special about this place? You know, are they showing different fashions from what I could get outside or anything? And I didn't get that feel, but, that's really a layman, non-rich person's view of the world or of the Australian retail sector.
But isn't the department store model now defunct or debunked? I mean, Peter, when did you last go to a department store? When did you last go? I mean, I remember when I first came to South Africa in 1988, I used to go to Stutterfords. I used to like Stutterfords on the ground floor there at Sandton City. But I don't go to department stores anymore. Does anyone? Do either of you two?
You know what, Lindsay? I think I've spoken to you about this before when I came back from the States. The department stores are turning themselves into luxury outlets. In other words, the beauty about it, if you go into Saks or Fifth Avenue, or you go into Bloomingdale's, and I've seen the same in Selfridges, what they do is, as you walk into the ground floor, which used to be the cosmetic division, you now go into bags, what do you call it, accessories, and purses and those, and shoes. And that's attracting the buyers, the young buyers. And it has to be ultra luxury, ultra attractive.
It's a very different model of changing. Yeah. I mean, if you tie it into, to look what's happening with Massmart, we can touch on it in a second, but, you know, wafer thin margins, shutting their game stores, shutting, Dion Wired, because you get a better product, you get a bigger selection at cheaper prices by going to, say, Takealot, which Naspers owns, for example. So that whole space is changing. It's exactly what David's saying. It's one of the few profitable sort of shopping, I don't know if the shopping center is the wrong word, but destination where people will go to travel to go shop in physical bricks and mortar in America. They use an example, one of the big places in Miami. And it's almost like a day's destination. They drive there. It's ultra high luxury goods. It's the sort of jewelry and that sort of space. They spend the day there. There's Michelin starred restaurants, and it's literally drive there to spend the day and come back. The idea of just popping into your neighborhood shop or doing your shopping doesn't work anymore. No. People are getting it delivered online. If you haven't got an online presence as a retail anymore, you're dead in the water. Yeah. So it's a very, very much, and it's a fast changing space at the moment. I don't know how far
it's
behind,
dead right.
But it is changing.
Yeah. So even in New York, they've got now Hudson Yard, which is a very attractive area.
Yeah, that's a big one.
And there you've got Neiman Marcus. It's the only store in New York. But the same thing, it's luxury. You know, you go in there and, you know, the salespeople look down on you. And what's it, Christian
Louis Vuitton?
Those
other shoes,
The Reds. I said to my wife there, I said, just stand next to those. Let me take a picture, because this is the closest you're going to get to those shoes in your life.
Poor woman.
The long suffering.
Yeah, exactly. Let's continue the retail theme, because I saw a headline today, and it's all over the Financial Times, in fact, is that a company called Boohoo is now bigger than Marks & Spencer's market cap-wise. Mm. Have either of you ever heard of Boohoo.com?
Nope.
Okay, it's an online retailer. It started to supply high street stores with big brands. It's now buying those brands. I think it's just bought Karen Millen online, and it's making a fortune, and it's doing well. And the thing is, as the New York annual retail conference started today, David Shapiro, I think there's a definite split. The retailers that are getting it right and the retailers that are getting it wrong. Look at Amazon and Walmart and Target, what they've done this year compared to places like Kohl, for example, or what's the other one, Macy's. So if you get it right, you get it very right. If you get it wrong, then you're a dinosaur. Mm. So I don't know. Maybe the same in South Africa.
Well, there's actually a one of the, obviously the earnings season kicked off in the States, and one of the companies reported today is a sort of a high-end sports maker called Lululemon. Mm. And they specialize in predominantly, they started off as women's yoga wear. And they've branched out into a bit more sort of what they call streetwear. That share a few years ago was $40. It's now $260 a share. It's a five bagger in the space of 3 years, and all they do is sell clothing online.
It's very upmarket gym wear. It's unaffordable for. I go in there and I look at the prices. You see, my daughter earns dollars. And my son and you, who do dollars, they can afford it.
The thought of David and yoga pants is quite frightening. But
now I've got to tell you something that has become very fashionable, and not good for people like me to be around.
No, I made a conscientious decision turning 40. I'll never wear cycling shorts or yoga pants. But no, you're right, but that ties into the high-end theme. I mean, that is
it is a
ultra high-end. It fits in with the whole wellness theme, etc. $260 a share at the moment.
Let's just go back to Boohoo. I just wanted to, because neither of you have heard of Boohoo. I hadn't heard of Boohoo, but it's bigger than Marks & Spencer's. And this is the story. Retailers' shares rocketed on the back of strong sales, overtaking high street rival Marks & Spencer. I mean, hello, Marks & Spencer. How much more high street can you get than Marks & Spencer?
This was UK-based, Lindsay, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Must be.
Revenues on the online fast fashion retailer jumped 44% to more than £1 billion in the 10 months to the end of December, sending shares up 5% to 331p. It values the company at £3.8 billion, £100 million more than M&S. That's extraordinary. I've never even heard of
them. Lindsay, the question you've got to ask yourself is, what is Marks & Spencer's today? What is Woolworths today? Where are they positioning themselves? Are they at the low end of the market, or the high end of the market, or somewhere in between?
Or you could hesitate to say, do they even know where they should be placed?
That's what I'm saying. And that to an extent is where Marks & Spencer's have come unstuck, is I'm not sure that they know where they used
to be. Sort of an identity crisis.
Remember, we used to know. We used to know that if you wanted a very nice jersey or pullover or sweater, whatever, whichever country you're in and whichever you want to describe it to me, it's a jersey, you would go to Woolworths and find a nice V-neck of something that you used to wear for work, remember? Yeah, that was Marks & Spencer's, and they would decide, this year we're going to do red sweaters, and red sweaters were ordered in China or something, and millions would come. But they're not there anymore. It was always high quality at a low price kind of thing. I'm not sure if that's – I think we're getting low quality at a high price now. The opposite.
I think you're absolutely right, because the V-necks, the jumpers that I buy from Woolworths when I go to South Africa, or the ones even in Marks & Spencer's, after they've been washed three times, they start to bobble a bit. You get those little bobbly things on them.
It irritates me. You know, it would always be the place you went to buy pajamas or slippers or a gown or underwear.
David,
keep it clean,
wear.
David.
Not yoga. Pajamas, I wish they would do yoga wear. That's the
I'm getting
problem.
A vision of what you had under your Christmas tree. This
year. He's got the slippers, he's got the pajamas, he's got the underwear.
Woolen gloves, scarf.
Smoking jacket,
Okay, gentlemen, calm down. Anyway, so retail, if you get it right, you get it right, but you've got to keep nimble. You've got to keep on going, because the fact that we haven't heard of Boohoo, but we have heard of Marks & Spencer's, tells you something about people that are changing and constantly changing, and certain retailers are not. Let's have a look at the markets if we can, gentlemen. It's been, what has it been today? I'm looking at other SENS announcements. There's not much
we
there.
We kicked up at the end.
Oh, did we? Okay.
You know what I mean? It's interesting because while we were waiting for you to come online, I was just comparing where we were before the closing auction to where we were after the closing auction. And there was a big kick up in the closing auction driven by, I see demand for nice bears. Mondi was one of the big traders. Sasol, a reasonable trader, but First Rand and BHP came in at the end. So there were a couple of shares, but I think it was particularly a demand for nice bears, which actually gave the market this kind of lift towards the end.
I think biggest volume of the year now. So finally, people starting to come back to their desks. Yeah. Nice to
good.
See it.
Very good. Let's have a look at the currency market to start with. The dollar rand is 14.41. It was 14.48 at one stage this morning. British pound against the rand is 18.74. And the euro rand is 16.02 with the euro dollar 111.20. On the international indices front, we've got the Dow Jones flat, the S&P down slightly, and the Nasdaq down slightly as well. FTSE in London is also flat. What are they waiting for? It's one of those almost like wait and see days. But anyway, commodities, the gold price is down 3 to 1544, slightly better than this morning. Platinum is 980, up 5. Palladium, Nick Kunze.
$2,152. And it's Brent, up almost 1%.
Good. Brent crude oil, $65.34, which is 0.7% higher, or 45 cents per barrel. Yeah. The trade deal, when's it going to be signed? Nick, you've been fascinated by the US-China phase one deal. Is it signed tomorrow? I think it is.
Phase one. Yes. So Vice Premier of China was on a plane yesterday. He arrives in Washington today and they're due to sign the deal tomorrow. I guess it'll probably be a bit of fanfare, I would imagine, around this time tomorrow. So in our afternoon, Wednesday afternoon.
Very good. David, are you skeptical of the significance of the trade deal, or is it something?
No, they'll celebrate it. And interestingly enough, I was just reading a piece on Bloomberg's, and they make a good point. They say that the Chinese are quite happy about it because I think what they have learned is how to read Trump, you know, for the next round. So they're confident that they know how to handle him. Yeah. So I think, you know, having gone through one session, maybe the next one they'll be a little more wary and a little better prepared for, you know, what to expect and how to read him and that. But I think overall the markets have responded very positively. So, you know, even though the S&P is slightly down at the moment and markets are taking a breather, I still think there's quite a positive undertone to the market. Now, JP Morgan came out with their numbers. They're up about 2.5%. I thought that the market would actually benefit. You know, JP Morgan are up, and that's giving the Dow a bit of an underpin. But I thought that the rest of the market would perhaps respond a little more vigorously to it. But hell, you know, we've had an incredible run in the first few days. So I think, you know, expecting it to, you know, to push harder from here is maybe asking a bit too much.
Okay, let me have a look at the big movers today on the JSE Securities Exchange of the big stocks. Anyway, but just before that, there was a couple of companies, property companies, that have come out with voluntary updates on the Dion Wired Massmart story. Mm. One was Hyprop yesterday, and the other one was Liberty 2. Liberty 2, and they're basically saying that everything's fine, don't worry about this. Do you agree with that?
Well, it's very – I think Liberty's got a slightly higher exposure than Hyprop. I mean, it's not overly exposed. In Liberty's deal, it's about 2%, which is not huge.
No.
And in Hyprop, I think less than 0.5%. So they can manage it. And I also don't think the stores are huge stores. You know, they're not of the size of Edgar's or a Pick and Pay and that. They're large stores, but I think not difficult to fill. So markets, I don't think, have been too negative on this fact.
Okay, top five major moves today, according to my screen. Massmart up 8.75%. Woolies up 7.8%. Old Mutual up 3.75%. Come to that in a moment. Assor up 2.7%. And Standard Bank up 2.6%. Nick Kunze, the Old Mutual story, is it linked to the CEO decision? They don't have to reinstate him, or is it just market action?
No, it's completely that. That story broke this morning, and initial reaction, the share hardly budged, and as people digested it and realized that basically this Harcourt victory against effectively Peter Moyer finally, I think, paves the way for Old Mutual to appoint a new leader. So it's been a little bit Old Mutual effectively rudderless for the last couple of months while the market's been ticking and squeezing higher. It's gone nowhere. It's been under $20 for as long as I can remember, and I'm on the back of the saga. So I think it certainly clears the way to finally get something, a little bit of a relief pop here. So it's entirely that and justified. And I think if you on Old Mutual shareholder, you'd be glad to see what looks like finally a bit of an end to this. What effectively has been, I mean, it has been a soap opera to not even be light. It's been embarrassing for them.
So, and a sordid little tale it has been. Yeah, it really has been.
No, it's been messy. Yeah.
On the talk about
messy. No, I just, this should never have taken place. No. And I know I'll be quoted tomorrow. I was asked a question. It should never have gone to a stage where it went to the courts. You know, right from the beginning, you have a altercation or there's accusations against the CEO for corporate governance issues sorted out at the company, come to some kind of conclusion, you know, which you both accept, and that's it. But to have gone to the courts and have spent so much money defending and these issues, and also for Moyer, the egos involved. Just astonishing. It is embarrassing.
But you know, the other thing also, David, in light of the last, say, year, there's been a couple of corporate governance failures and so on, not to mention the accounting problems we've had and the likes of Tonga and a few others. You know, it's actually, you know, we need to sort of pick ourselves up and stop sort of in the eyes of the international community, we didn't cover ourselves in glory, and this particular behavior, it just doesn't sit well. You're right, it looks embarrassing.
You know what, Nick? We've got King Code, and for King, we were always regarded as ahead of the rest of the world in governance.
We literally wrote the rules on how to behave in publicly elected.
And we're the biggest breaches here. I mean, if we go from Steinhoff through to, you know, through to Tonga, through to even these issues. Mm. Whatever the board did, you know, the board didn't cover themselves in glory either. I'm talking the board of Old Mutual.
No, they didn't. So no one came out of this very pretty. Mm-hmm. Anyway, nice to put an end to this, and hopefully it's the last year of it.
Indeed. On the downside today on the JSE, AngloGold Ashanti, which is a commodity company, down 4%. Mm. Harmony, which is a commodity company, down 3.75%. Mondi, which is a commodity company, down 2.9%. Sasol, I think it's a commodity company, down 2.4%. And Sibanye, do you know what that does? It makes commodities down 2.1%. What is that? I mean, the rand's not that.
Those prices have come under pressure. You know, gold has been under pressure. Not too long ago, I think only last week. I can't remember when the Iran incident happened. It seems like ages ago.
But 10 days
gold
ago.
Was up at, gold was up at 1600. So it's slowly giving up the gains that it made at 1540, wherever it is now. It's quite a way down, and I think platinum and palladium, platinum's holding. I know palladium's at high prices, but I think it's more gold that sent those prices down. Strangely enough, iron ore quite strong. That's why you've got the Azor situation. Mm. And I picked up copper has been quite, you know, reasonably strong lately. Those prices, oil's also come down, of course. You know, with the easing of tensions as well. So if you take oil and gold, I think maybe that's one of the reasons you're seeing that pressure.
Okay.
Downward pressure.
All right, gentlemen. I just want to talk to you about something now because I know you're both football supporters. In fact, David, you don't know this, but Nick Kunz's son is a mad Barcelona and Messi supporter, and he got the Messi boots and he got the Messi shirt for Christmas, and why shouldn't he? I wish I'd had somebody buy me a Messi shirt and a pair of Messi boots. I'd been very, very, very proud. But Barcelona won the league, has won the La Liga title 2 years in a row now. Last year it won the Spanish Cup as well. This year, or the year before, it won the Spanish Cup. This year it didn't do it. It lost in the Super Cup semi-final to Atletico Madrid this week in Saudi Arabia. And what have Barcelona done? They've sacked him. Ernesto Valverde is, after winning two championships in a row by a country mile, easily beating the opposition, which is essentially Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid. And they sack him and they appoint a chap from Real Betis. Because they say that they're not playing good football. I don't know if you've seen a Barcelona game recently, but I'd say it's the best football I've ever seen.
I can't comment. I mean, it is crazy. Unless they're starting to see signs of weakness within Barcelona that's caused them to do that. Maybe they're unhappy, as you say, with the style of, I mean, at the moment they're getting the results and they have got the results, but there might be some, it might be in the dressing room that there's problems, who knows. But I mean, I find it rather odd, you know, that it reminds me of our clients. So for somebody who's, you know, who's been in the market for years, you know, it's typical of maybe trying to satisfy the Barcelona public is the same as trying to satisfy a client. Nick, you might have better experience than me. I don't know.
Well, satisfying clients. but listen, speaking of Barcelona, it would have tickled you guys' interest if you saw it. So once a year you have Deloitte publishes what they call their Football Money League.
Mm.
And that actually came out this morning, incidentally. So they published their wealthiest soccer clubs based on revenue. In this particular case, it's the 2018-2019 football season. So FC Barcelona have now come out tops for the first time.
Well done.
And they are on target, get this, guys, they generated revenue of $959 million, which puts them on target to be the first billion-dollar football club.
And they're owned by the fans, eh?
Yes, it's a community club. Yeah. Yes,
There's no owners.
It's now the gap between. So Real Madrid is number two, which they just overtook. They were number one last year. The gap is now 95 million, which is the highest it's been in the 23-year history of Deloitte. So Barcelona are running away with it. Just to run through here, because it actually is quite interesting. So FC Barcelona top, 959 million in revenue. Real Madrid 864. Man U third at 811. And then followed by the first German, Bayern Munich, 753, and Paris Saint-Germain, 725. And Man City, right down at six, and then Liverpool, seven.
PSG
is above Man City.
That's
$725 million in revenue.
Yeah,
it's interesting, gentlemen.
Their stadium is full. Every week their stadium is full, PSG. Whereas Man City don't always get it. They maybe get a few thousand empty seats.
Tottenham Hotspur making up the top 10, $594 million in revenue.
Very good.
Talk about a business, though.
Sure. Before you two die or lose interest in football, go to the Camp Nou, and before Messi retires, which will be within the next two seasons, go and see it. It is a religious experience. We've been talking about retail today, so my quote of the day comes from Will Smith, and he was talking about shopping. He says, too many people spend money they haven't earned to buy things they don't want to impress people they don't like. Which I thought was quite neat and very true as well. David Shapiro, go and get your pajamas and your slippers on. Nick Kunze, thank you very much for your time. We'll be back on Thursday. That was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.